Hey, what's going on, everyone? Running a little late today. Apologies. Let me, here we go. Cool. This thing pops up here. Boom. All right. Okay, cool. Okay, so I'll wait a little bit for people to come in. I have some book recommendations today as well, and then we'll rock and roll. Okay. Man, the weird thing is with coffee or with green tea, with me personally, I find you can kind of drink it almost daily and not get sick of it at all, where like other drinks you obviously get sick of it and stuff like that. Let me play around with lighting a little bit. There we go. Cool. Okay. Right, cool. So you guys, I am going to, let me see. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about how to rewild your diet. And you guys, I got my notes here just to make sure I don't miss anything. All right, guys. So today we're going to be talking about how to rewild your diet and steps you can take to do so. And you guys, just like I mentioned on a lot of my lives or solo casts in general, just remember, with online advice, even if you're listening to someone like very, very competent, you have to understand they never very, very competent and understand first and foremost that that's going to be like really hard to find online to begin with. But even if you do find a very competent person online, just understand that they never met you personally and they don't know your exact situation. So without meeting you personally, it's like, how are they supposed to give you, without meeting you personally and knowing your exact core values, goals, objectives, et cetera, how are they supposed to kind of give you the proper advice, especially when it comes to like a highly, highly, highly variable topic like mental and physical health, for example? It's kind of the equivalent, like I mentioned, of basically you go into a doctor's office and they never met you personally. Johnny, what is going on? Haven't seen you in a while, man. Let me know what's new. But kind of imagine following advice online is basically the equivalent of going to a doctor and they never met you personally, but they're like, here's some medication, but they never met you. They never kind of chatted with you or anything. And you're like, wait, that would kind of sound super weird to you, And it's the same thing with following advice online. So just be like very careful. And what I'm kind of mentioning here is moreover like something I would personally do or do with my clients or go about doing personally. And that's kind of how to rewild your diet. And this is obviously, there's like a lot of topics that go into optimizing your health, but your nutrition is going to be like literally one of the biggest ones. So first and foremost, I mean, here's what you would go about doing, and here's what's important to understand. You have to understand that everything about you, there are like 12 human systems, and everything about you, or all those 12 human systems, are basically made out of food. I know it sounds like really weird to think about it that way because you obviously don't hear about it like that or phrased that way often, but it's very true. If you think about it, like your dad's sperm and your mom's egg required food to form. And then when your mom was conceiving you, that required a lot of food over many, many months. And then as you grew over the decades, from like 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, et cetera, that required a tremendous amount of different macronutrients as well. So everything about you is made out of food. And obviously, if you're sourcing like industrial food or very processed food, or like, for example, you're eating a lot of sick animals and sick plants that are grown with like a gargantuous amount of like biocides, preservatives, additives, pesticides, fungicides, rodenticides, herbicides, whatever. There's like thousands and thousands of different chemicals in the agricultural system. And obviously, if you're eating that stuff and you can't expect to be healthy. You can't expect to be healthy eating sick animals and sick plants. It's just not how it works. And if you're a bit more on the spiritual side, you have to remember you inherit the spirit, you know, of plants and animals that you end up eating. And they're both living. Plants are living, animals are living, et cetera, et cetera. And if you eat the flesh or the tissue of like miserable animals and miserable plants, you too will be miserable. You know, you can't, again, you can't expect to be healthy eating sick animals and sick plants. So that's critical to understand. And a lot of people don't see it that way. And they have a lot of chronic health issues their whole entire life. And they're oftentimes told that it's genetics or it's because of age. So some common myths I hear, it's like I'm gaining weight because of my age. That's a super, super common myth. And it's totally false. A person's metabolism doesn't even change from like your 20s all the way through your mid 60s. I mean, the changes are so minute. And I would argue if you just kind of stay healthy and lift weights and increase your muscle mass over the decades, your metabolism would actually improve as you get older. Like I'm 40 years old and I have to eat 3,000 calories a day just to maintain my weight. And then about, I estimated about like 3,800 to 4,000 calories every single day, 7 days a week to gain weight. Okay, so that's a gargantuous amount of calories. And I'm only about 200 to 205 pounds roughly during the year, you know. So if you're a lot more muscular, like 220, I mean, you're looking at probably like, 5,000 calories a day. So don't believe this myth that metabolism decreases with age. It totally doesn't. It's a false myth. And don't believe in other stuff like, you know, high blood pressure increases with age, or triglycerides, or HDL goes lower with age, or resting blood glucose levels go. These are total lifestyle disorder issues. So if like your blood pressure is going up, you know, you have hypertension, too much tension. You have too much tension in life. So you got to decrease the tension from, you know, using movement as medicine, sleeping more, taking on less stressful work, allowing good rest intervals, like very long rest intervals in between stressful projects at work, you know? So ideally, it's kind of like you can't have like a stressful project for multiple weeks and expect like a weekend to allow recovery of your body. That's just not how it works. Usually, how the ideal situation would be like have a stressful project for like a week. And then, like, take a week or two off. These are the ideal type of situations because the human central nervous system can't kind of recover very well from a huge abundance of micro and macro stressors, which most people have in their life, you know? So don't believe in this whole genetics thing. There is some like super rare, one in a few thousand cases where a person may have chronically high blood pressure, for example, like in the 300s. And again, that's like one in a few thousand cases, and there's not much they can do about it. But remember also, how about the other 2,999 people? In those cases, it's just poor lifestyle and nutritional choices and lack of education on how to properly manage the human mind and body while you're trying to survive in the external world that are leading to, you know, metabolic issues like high blood pressure, high resting blood glucose, like the A1C, high triglycerides, low HDL, high LDL, you know, high body fat percentage, etc. Those are all metabolic markers that you want to consider, or hormonal markers like low testosterone. That's a very common one I hear. My testosterone is going down with age. So first of all, you can have 800 nanograms per deciliter into your 40s and 50s, no problem, even into your 60s, if you just kind of live sustainably and like a human being, and eat real food, etc., etc. It's just kind of hard these days because just people have become so detached and so sick, it's kind of become normalized. So you hear everyone saying this, so you presume it's just normal and it happens with age, but again, it's just not normal whatsoever. So remember, key thing to remember is you are made out of food. So don't expect to be mentally or physically healthy if you're eating sick animals and sick plants that are grown with a lot of pesticides, okay? Another key important variable to consider is your digestive system has spent a long time evolving in tandem with the soil food web, with the composition of the soil. Because you guys have to remember too, like everything comes from the earth, the soil. We even came from the earth, and you go back into the earth. And it's kind of like an enclosed ecosystem. You come from the earth, you require, you know, nutrients that come from the earth to sustain yourself while you're alive in the external world. and then eventually, you die, everyone dies, and they go back into the earth and then kind of get recycled into this soil food web, basically, this enclosed ecosystem, okay? So it's important to eat food that has evolved in tandem with the soil food web, because that is what your digestive system, all its different microbes and everything, and bacteria, et cetera, has developed to be able to assimilate those nutrients over the years. And the Earth has gone through, it's estimated like 4.5 billion years of very complicated and harsh evolution. You got to remember there have been four or five mass extinctions. I forgot off the top of my head, but 4 to 5 mass extinctions that at one point has pretty much wiped out all of life from the Earth. And during that complicated evolution, the soil has evolved a certain way, and living organisms have evolved a certain way to live in tandem with the soil. So you can't be eating food or additives or preservatives that are basically very new. Most of them have been created in the last like 10, 20, 30 years, and expect created in laboratories on top of that, and expect your digestive system to be able to recognize this new material and be able to assimilate it appropriately without having side effects. And remember, digestive issues are extremely prevalent in the world today. It's estimated that 45% of people have chronic digestive issues of one sort or another. And this kind of goes into hand in hand with just people kind of normalizing being sick. Like 90% of people right now in the US are metabolically sick. Metabolic sickness is measured in government standards. You need two of these red flags. So if you have high body fat percentage, that's one red flag. High resting blood glucose, that's another red flag. So you're already metabolically sick if you have those two. Usually those two go hand in hand. If you have high blood pressure, that's another red flag, metabolic marker. If you have low HDL, that's another red flag, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, I would argue if you're just in the red in one of those, you're metabolically sick. Or if you have high blood pressure as well, that's another red marker, et cetera, et cetera. So 90% of Americans are metabolically sick, and 85% or so are either overweight or obese, And also, it's 2025. Americans are the most, Terry is in the house. It's 2025, and Americans right now are the most medically drugged out humans in all of human history, but also, ironically, mentally and physically, still remain the sickest humans in all of human history. So, remember, it's important to follow these basic principles of nature, because it's either you follow these rules. Human biology changes extremely slowly. It takes hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of years to even have the most minute of change. So basically, the biology you're born with is the biology you're going to die with. And that kind of biology has spent, billions of years directly and indirectly. You can count the universe too. I mean, the universe is about 11 billion years old. It's taken 11 billion years for the universe to form, all of the billions of galaxies, then to form our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, then our solar system, then the Earth on there. Then the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. That soil has gone through very complicated evolution to be able to form the nutrients that, again, your digestive system is able to recognize and assimilate without having side effects. Okay, so it's important to follow these rules. You're not above the rules. It's either you follow them or you pay the consequence of being metabolically sick, needing to take a gargantuous amount of medical drugs, all of which, with chronic use, throw off your biochemistry a tremendous amount. And then you're stuck with even more health issues, which require even more medical drugs. And that's why you see a lot of people in their 40s and 50s, they're on 4 or 5 medical drugs and still look beyond terrible and still feel beyond terrible. And I don't know what their strategy is long term with pursuing that path. So we mentioned, you are made out of food. Everything about you is made out of food. And that way, thus, you can't expect to be healthy eating sick animals and sick plants. We mentioned the evolution of the digestive system, how it's evolved in tandem with the soil food web, and how that evolution or that relationship has basically allowed your digestive system to recognize what real food is and be able to assimilate it. And it also mentioned the importance of the soil food web. Now, the fourth thing you want to consider is when you're trying to rewild your diet, you want to kind of step away from industrial agriculture. That's very important for a couple of reasons. So first of all, like, what is industrial agriculture? So industrial agriculture is factory farming, monocropping. So I know a lot of you guys might go on Google and you see these huge fields of single crops with tremendous amount of machinery and it looks like very high tech. But trust me, that's like the worst type of farming in terms of nutrient quality. And in terms of sustainability as well. Remember, factory farming or industrial agriculture is quite new. It really kind of hit pace around 1965. The factory farm model was started by John and Don Tyson. It's like a father and son. So it's very new. It hasn't been around. It's kind of fallen short a tremendous amount in a lot of areas in the sense that it's totally not sustainable. It requires a gargantuous amount of subsidies from the government to be able to exist. It's created actually more hunger in food deserts throughout America. And the majority of the world actually is still farm to table. Factory farming is not predominant. I think 75% of the world still gets their food directly from the farmer. And in fact, you can analyze those communities where they get that food directly from the farmer. And you can see they typically do not suffer from like obesity, misery, and disease and medical drug dependence like a lot of people do in the US. All right, so industrial agriculture, it looks high tech and it looks fancy, but trust me, it's anything but. First of all, in terms of monocropping, monocropping is you could refer to it as like a single farm, single crop farming system. So it's kind of where you grow, acres and acres of carrots or corn, usually corn, soy, canola, et cetera, et cetera. And this is not how it happens in nature. So you can go out, today's the weekend, you can go out to any little nature preserve and just walk around for even 3 minutes and you'll probably run into, four or five different bird species, a couple of squirrels, rabbits, four or five different bushes, 10 different forms of grass, maybe four different trees, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe a duck or whatever. So this is biodiversity. And this is how nature actually operates. And you need this level of biodiversity for not only sustainability, but also nutrient quality and density as well. So like, for example, like dandelion leaf, okay? You guys have seen these, the leaves of dandelion plants are actually a gargantuous amount more nutrient dense than even spinach. And spinach is rated as kind of like a superfood, So that biodiversity is critical and critically important. Because that's kind of just how it happens in nature. And when you take that biodiversity out, inevitably, when you just grow a single crop, you grow deficiencies in the soil food web. The soil food web is basically kind of, you can look at it, every plant has like a root system, and it uses that root system to gather nutrients for the plant. And remember, the more nutrients that plant can gather, the more nutrients you will have accessible when you eat that plant. That's just how it works. You can't create nutrients out of nothing. You have to go acquire it using your central nervous system, which basically uses your arms and your legs to kind of navigate around the external world and acquire these calories and the macro and micronutrients that come with them. So with the root system, inevitably every plant has a unique bacteria to fungi ratio in this kind of radius called the rhizosphere. It's just a fancy way of saying stuff around the root system, basically. And basically, through the use of the sun and the water and the rain, it disperses sugar throughout these roots, throughout this rhizosphere, and kind of attracts a certain type of ratio of a soil food web specific to that crop, which is fine. And that's what helps optimize the nutrient density of that crop. The problem is when you grow a single crop season after season after season in that same exact area, it starts creating imbalances in the soil food web because it only is attracting a certain type of nutrient composition specific to that plant. And once that happens, the plant becomes weak. And once the plant becomes weak, because it's not getting the proper nutrients because now the soil is deficient in certain nutrients. Nature sends in pests. Pests are nature's way of getting rid of sick plants, basically. And when the pests are there and the farmer can't change the farming practices because it's very hard to change industrial operations because you have, you know, billions of dollars invested, if not hundreds of billions of dollars invested into warehouses and machinery and logistics and trucks and seeds and a gargantuous amount of inevitably chemicals that have to be used to grow these systems. They have to use chemicals to get rid of these pests. And whenever they use chemicals, unfortunately, this disrupts the soil food web even more. So it typically kills the fungi, arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, which is extremely beneficial for the plant, and typically creates a bacterial overgrowth of the plant, which inevitably creates this kind of nasty cycle in the soil food web even more, disrupting it even more, and thus making it even harder for the plant to acquire its nutrients. So now not only in the next season are there more pests, so the farmer has to use more pesticides, but also the farmer typically will have to use more fertilizers as well to bring the nutrients back into the soil artificially. And this is kind of like a short-term game. It actually works really well short-term, but long-term is just unsustainable, and it kind of turns the soil into dirt, which is basically void of any nutrients. And then that's it. You know, the plot of land is destroyed and it can't be farmed. And only about, you know, 8% of the world's surface can actually be farmed for food. And one of the biggest contributors to the destruction of fertile land is this monocropping type of farming system, okay? So luckily, there is a little bit of positive on the horizon. You know, there are steps being taken to make farming practices more sustainable, but we still have like a really long way to go, like a really long way to go, because there has been so much damage that has been done over the last 50 or 60 years or so. So what you want to do is basically step away, and this might have to happen in phases, and I'll talk about how to possibly do that realistically here, is step away from farming or industrial agriculture in general and get to as close to food as Mother Nature can make it. Because she is the best farmer around. She's been doing it for 4.5 billion years. And no one even comes close. You can get really good biodynamic farmers or regenerative people that are really good in regenerative agriculture, et cetera, but they're still not gonna come close to the sustainability and the diversity and just the natural composition that Mother Nature would do. So the closer you get to how she's farming, trust me, the healthier you will be, okay? Of course, there's more that you probably need to change than just your diet, but your diet's gonna be one of those like main pillars that's gonna hold up the house, basically, okay? So four things we covered so far is you're made out of food. So obviously, if you're eating sick animals and sick plants, you can't expect to be healthy yourself. The evolution, the importance of understanding the evolution of the soil with the digestive system, the importance of the soil food web, and getting away from industrial agriculture or just farming in general. So how would you do that? So we got a few things. I'm going to cover the big food groups. Let's cover meats and fish first. So kind of like protein sources, okay? So with meats, the closer, how to get away from industrial agriculture. One thing you can do, it's totally not necessary, but it's something I supplement with, is just get into hunting and fishing. Again, totally not necessary, but this is a good way to actually have like wild game and wild fish. And most people, they may need, depending on their goals, they may need just like a half a pound of like a meat or fish type protein source per day. And if you're like super physically active and super muscular, maybe a pound, you know, so it's not that much. So you really need like 365 pounds a year or whatever that is divided by two, let's say 250 per year. And oftentimes that could just be like, 10 fish and a deer and a boar per year, you know, and that's it. And in a lot of areas, or at least the area where I am, like finding deer and boar is very easy. And fish is very easy as well. So it's something you could actually do, and then you don't have to even, buy meat or fish at the grocery store ever again, okay? And it's easier to do than you think. You just need a hunting license, which is super easy to get, honestly. I forgot the price, but it was not expensive. I think 30 or 40 bucks, and it's pretty much yours for life. And basically, depending on the state or the region, you have some sort of quota of what you can and the quantities you can hunt. So, like for example, the area I'm at, you can hunt, two deer per year, but you can hunt unlimited boar. And there's a lot more flexibility in terms of your fishing as well. I would just recommend, probably in this case, you can find, it's not like easy to learn on your own, although there's not like a gargantuous amount to learn, but you can Google wilderness survival courses in your area, and I'm sure you can find a hunting mentor or a course. I would recommend taking that. It would fast track your journey so much, and then maybe read one book on it in terms of hunting, how it particularly relates to your area too, because every area is going to be different, you know. So if you're like in I don't know, Colorado, you might not want to buy a book on how to hunt in Alaska, for example. You know, you want to find a book on how to hunt in Colorado, because it's very environment specific. You can again get these courses, just internet search wilderness survival course or hunting course near me. A lot of hunters, they just do it as a hobby. They'll be happy to even teach you for free. I had a hunting mentor, I had two, but one, Greg Pleasant, I just found through a wilderness survival course, and he showed me from start to finish, how to find hunting sites. First of all, like how to get the proper equipment, the hunting rifle, et cetera, how to find hunting sites, understanding migration of animals, understanding how they evade hunters, and then also how to process the animal and store the animal as well. It's very unique. It could teach you a tremendous amount about Mother Nature, and it also teaches you, like at least from my perspective, from my experience, not to be wasteful, and how thankful you are for, the life of an animal or a plant for giving you life, because inevitably they're alive too, So there's a lot more meaning to it that I found than just going and buying the meat at the grocery store, for example. So nothing you must do, but picking up hunting and fishing, I mean, this is the best farmer around. Wild game, wild fish, wild forage. Nothing's going to beat the nutrient density and the sustainability of those food groups. Nothing. However, if you don't want to do that, you don't have to. You can go to like companies like, for example, Force of Nature Meats. I think it's Force of Nature Meats. You can check it out. They sell a lot of their products at like Whole Foods in the frozen section, usually Sprouts, more organically themed type stores. And they sell elk, they sell deer, they sell wild boar, they sell regeneratively raised chicken, I think turkey, I'm not 100% sure, but chicken for sure. They also sell cool blends of organ and ground meats as well. That way you can get more diversity of pieces in a single, like 1 pound packet of ground beef that's mixed with like heart, kidney, liver, maybe spleen, et cetera, because that's another important thing of rewilding your diet, making sure you're eating like all of the portions of the plant roughly, or all of the portions of the animal, et cetera. You can check out websites like grass-fed, americangrassfed.org as well, and they sell all regeneratively raised, 100% legit pasture raised, usually beef, but then also a lot of the ranches have like goat, or they sell like pork as well, bison, 100% grass-fed and grass-finished bison, et cetera. This is more towards, farming, like I mentioned. It's not like wild wild, but the animals are fed a species-specific diet, which is critically important to optimize the nutritional profile of that animal. So like cattle are, or like you could say cows, are herbivores, so they eat a bunch of grass, chickens are omnivores, so they have a mixed diet. They eat a bunch of bugs, plants, they just have a mixed diet of fruit, etc., vegetables, etc., etc. Ross, good to see you. I'm gonna take a little break here, coffee break. And then fish are omnivores as well, oftentimes, okay? So American grass-fed, the good thing about them too is if you're dead set on American products, all of their products are grown in America, processed in America, and also delivered in America as well. Because you have to remember, a lot of, you'll be surprised, but like 90% of beef that's sold in the US actually comes from outside of the US, even if it's labeled product of the USA. That just simply legally means it's processed in the USA. That's all. So you can get the beef from like Brazil, JBS is a big company, import it into the US, process it in California, package it in California, and it can still be stamped product of the USA. Right? So if you want American companies from start to finish, AmericanGrassFed.org, make sure that's the case. And honestly, any ranch on there, you can kind of scroll to the bottom of the website and click in the interactive map. Any ranch on there, if they go through that certification process, which is pretty extensive, they're very legitimate, okay? So a lot of them too, you don't have to order from your state. A lot of them deliver as well. So take that into consideration. But if you want local, you can pick one. You can just click on your state and see what's around your area. Another company is actually a place I worked at when gathering research, when doing a lot of research for my second book, Anti-Factory Farm Shopping Guide. And that's the number 5barbeef.com. So this is actually wild cattle. This guy's name is Frank Fitzpatrick, and he sells wild beef. So his story, I think he started his herd of cattle maybe 30 years ago or 40 years ago, maybe even longer. And basically, good morning from the Philippines. Jay, what is going on? Sebastian, good to see you jump in too. So his story is he started his herd quite a long time ago. And what he did was just allow the weak cattle to die out in that particular environment. And then only the cattle that could excel in that environment were left alive to breed, to create more cattle that could excel in that environment even better. And that kind of more natural selective breeding is what creates like very strong, healthy animals and humans too. So, and fast forward, a few decades, he doesn't have to use any medicines, he doesn't have to use any antibiotics, beta agonists, steroids. He also doesn't alter the bulls at all, so doesn't cut off their horns, doesn't clip them as well. When you leave kind of the testicles on the bull, that the testosterone profile of the meat is actually much higher as well. And remember, the healthier the animal is, or the healthier the plant is, the healthier you will be by eating those as well. It just kind of goes hand in hand, you know? You just got to use common sense there. But his cattle are just wild, and we would even process them out in the field. They don't even go to the slaughter facility for local deliveries either. So that's meats, okay? With fish, they do still sell wild fish at the grocery store, so that's cool. Or you can go fishing as well, or you can order from websites like vitalchoice.com, okay? They fish in remote areas of Alaska. I found personally like Whole Foods to sell a good variety of wild fish, natural grocers, and Sprouts. To sell a good variety, because remember, the more variety you get in your diet, and the more reflective of the season as well, that's another important variable to consider when rewilding your diet. Okay, so organic fruits and vegetables. This one's going to be tough at the grocery store level to really replicate the wild type of forage. Okay, you could get into wild foraging. It's very time intensive, but super cool, especially with mushrooms. Super cool, especially done with like a partner or a friend. To learn about it, you would probably have to, I would recommend definitely getting a mentor in your specific area, or Googling wild foraging courses or wild wilderness survival courses in your area, because you got to be very careful with plants in the wilderness, wild foraging, especially with like mushrooms and certain greens as well. But once you know what to look for in your area, it's quite easy. Like my area, there's a lot of bilberry trees, and I love those because I like blueberries. Pretty much kind of the same. So 2 months out of the year, or almost 3 months out of the year, I wouldn't even have to really buy a lot of berries. I would just get it that way. The problem with grocery store fruits and vegetables is they're all going to come from typically from a monocrop operation. Under extremely rare circumstances, they don't, but it's extremely rare. Most of them always come from a single crop farming system. So they basically grow acre after acre after acre of the same type of crop, you know? And inevitably, with this system, even if it's organic, you're not going to get that nutrient density you're going to find out in the wilderness when you're wild foraging, okay? It's just not going to happen. And then you got to take into consideration too that the crops are usually picked before they ripen, so they can ripen on the way to the store and be quite firm, so it's a higher chance of you purchasing it. Valid reason why the farmers do this, but something to understand. That ripening process is what gives the plants its nutrients. And then remember, when you have a single crop farming system, inevitably that's going to create soil imbalances, so it would require a lot more biocide input. Even with organic, they may not be using like glyphosate or atrazine or things of that sort, which are very dangerous, but they are using probably a lot of copper, you know, or a lot of salt in water, and this could impact the soil microorganisms quite a bit, not in the favor of the plant, you know, and create more imbalances and stuff of that sort. So, another issue in the US market is most of the crops, or a lot of them, are actually grown hydroponically as well, even if they're certified organic. So, hydroponics, basically, you got to look at it this way. It's kind of like a container. It can be grown outside too, but it's kind of like a container or a warehouse. And they basically have a bunch of plants in like a very high-tech looking facility hooked up to kind of like IV drips, and they kind of put artificial nutrients into the plant to get it to grow. So they're not even grown in soil. And remember, we talked about the importance of the soil, right? I think hydroponics is a cool technology and maybe has a place in time when, especially if humans start colonizing other planets. But that's something for you to understand as a consumer. If you see the crops, especially it's like very likely, like tomatoes, very likely to be grown hydroponically, bell peppers, various berries. If you see the company called Driscoll's, they, from at least my research a while back, they grow pretty much everything hydroponically. Okay? So that's something to understand. It's not coming from the soil, even if it's certified organic. So, okay. And I mentioned foraging, you know. David, what is going on? So I mentioned foraging, and that's kind of your best option for fruits and vegetables, but again, it's very time intensive, so it's up to you if you want to want to invest that time. I went to a company called Earth Native Wild to learn my wilderness skills. I even did an 8-month wilderness survival course there. So again, if you want to learn these things, it's there. Just understand it's time intensive, but understand it's also ultra cool. It's so cool. And once you do it, it's kind of tough to not do it, at least as a hobby. So that's for vegetables and fruit, how to rewild your vegetables and fruit. Water's tough, you know. There are a lot of chemicals these days, industrial chemicals, like the average newborn born in a metropolitan area. These days is already born with like 100, 150 to 200, trace amounts of 150 to 200 different chemicals within their bloodstream already. So that's troubling, you know, and a lot of these chemicals, you have to understand it's an enclosed ecosystem. So whatever goes into the clouds eventually goes into the water, and the water goes back into the soil, et cetera, et cetera. And then remember that soil food web we talked about and how it relates to your overall health. So with water, your best options are, and it depends on exactly what you're trying to do, but if you're trying to filter out all chemicals all together, your best option is a reverse osmosis machine, which I would recommend probably getting from like a Costco because they have good policies. There's a couple of different stages. The 5-stage reverse osmosis will definitely get rid of absolutely everything, including a lot of the pharmaceutical chemicals that make it into the water supply as well, because a lot of the utility companies don't have the proper technology to be able to filter out this gargantuous amount of pharmaceuticals that a lot of Americans are on, and they obviously pee into the toilet, and then it makes it into the public water supply. And then not only are you getting a glass of water every day with 100 different trace amounts of 100 different industrial chemicals, but you're also getting someone's statins and someone's antidepressants as well in that water too, just for free. Or you can do something that I do. Like I have a Berkey countertop gravity fed filter as well. A little bit more maintenance to consider, but those are cool as well. And they don't, the issue with reverse osmosis is inevitably kind of depletes pretty much all of the nutrients of the water as well. But you do get rid of all of the chemicals. With the Berkey, it gets rid of a gargantuous amount of chemicals as well. I tested it very thoroughly for especially chlorine. And I remember in my area, I forgot exactly, but it was like 3 or 4 parts per million of chlorine. And then I ran it through the Berkey, tested the water again, and it was like 0.0001, basically undetectable levels of chlorine, okay? But on the other hand, it doesn't get rid of all of the chemicals 100%, but you do keep more of the nutrition of the water, because you have to remember the water is living as well. And in fact, water is the most important nutrient out of all the nutrients out there. It's pretty much 99% of your cells are water, you know? So if you're getting poor quality water, just like we mentioned, if you're eating sick animals and sick plants that are grown with a lot of chemicals, you can't expect to be healthy yourself. But if you're also drinking sick water, you can't expect to be healthy either, you know? So everything is reflective of how healthy and how healthy and quote unquote sounds kind of cheesy, but how happy was your food is going to be a big determinant on how healthy and happy you are as well. So, okay. Now the last thing I want to cover here is fiber, okay? This one's quite low into the American diet. The average American gets about 20 grams of fiber per day. And fiber, soluble and insoluble, is quite important. And there are three variables to consider with your fiber intake. So one is the quantity. How much fiber should you get? So a hunter-gatherer typically ate around 150 to 200 grams of fiber per day, where the average American eats around 20 grams of fiber per day. So the average American eats 20 grams of fiber per day. The average hunter and gatherer ate about 150 to 200 grams of fiber per day. Okay, so quantity is important. Diversity is also equally important. You can't get fiber from all just one quantity. You got to remember the bacteria in your gut, like your keystone species, for example, in your gut, each one requires different types of food to grow. And when you're eating only one type of, let's say, source of fiber, only one keystone species is being fed and thus growing, but the other ones are being starved out and diminishing. And it creates kind of an imbalance in your digestive system. And it's important to have like a good balance and resilience in these things called your gut keystone species. Very important. And what determines that resilience is basically, am I getting the right quantity? Am I getting a good diversity? A good diversity would be, 30 to 40 different sources of fiber per week in variable quantities. And am I also sourcing that source of fiber from good sources, like we mentioned here? Am I getting it from a monocrop operation that uses a gargantuous amount of pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, rodenticides, maybe even synthetic fertilizers, et cetera, because then all of those chemicals are disrupting the gut microbiome also. You can look up a gargantuous amount of studies on glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in the complete formulation of Roundup Ready, and its detrimental impact on the gut microbiome. And I think it's been a while since I studied this, but I think close to 90% of urine samples in the adult population in America had trace amounts of glyphosate in it. And this is having a negative impact on your digestive system, obviously. So remember the three things with fiber again: quantity, am I getting the right quantity? Am I having the right diversity? Am I sourcing it correctly? correctly as well? Is my sourcing high quality? So those are the three things to consider. And some cool tests to consider if you want to know how your keystone species are doing, to basically be more exact with your approaches, you can get like a Biome FX stool test done. You can message me. I work with a registered dietitian that can have these delivered directly to you. And that way I can kind of fast track it for you. But you can get that done. They basically send you this test. I don't get any kickbacks from this. This is just a great technology you could use to help customize your health journey and take a lot of the guesswork out of it. Because sometimes guessing, especially when you have chronic health issues, could be quite frustrating and annoying. You want a faster, more streamlined solution. So, but yeah, they basically send this test to you. You take the stool test, you send the sample out to a lab, and you get results like 2 weeks later. So stuff of this sort. So Biome FX stool test. That's a great resource. So that's about it, guys. So those are the steps like I would take personally if I was interested in rewilding my diet. In fact, those are the steps I have taken. And 40 years old, still very great muscle to fat ratio all year round. The good thing is once you really get your sourcing of food on point, it makes staying like very, very lean and having good clear skin, etc., very easy. Because again, it's critically important to understand you're just a reflection of how healthy the food you eat was. Big part of it is that, okay? I don't use any face washes, I just wash my face with water, etc. So stuff of that sort. So that's it for today, guys. There's so much more to this topic, but that already gives you such a gargantuous amount of great information and practical tools of how you can make the change. I did finish a really cool book, something to, if you guys are into reading, so Industrial Society and Its Future. Very cool. The author basically talked about, the impact of industry, how it has on the human race, et cetera, and he brought up some good points. I mean, a lot of it's like pretty obvious. Brought up some good points in terms of how a lot of occupations, moreover, dictate what work is incentivized. You know, like some occupations obviously get paid way more than others. So industry basically dictates what people should be interested in to a degree, because it's obviously income is quite important if you're living in a monetized society and stuff of that sort. So his big thing is like people start working for technology instead of technology working for people. And the big long-term vision, which might actually be closer today than ever, I think he wrote this book in like 1990, is eventually the implementation of AI will create advanced technologies that the human brain cannot comprehend. It doesn't have that, human brain won't have that type of processing power. And thus, the humans will be forever reliant on this AI technology and won't be able to get rid of it at a certain point. And eventually become more and more advanced. And eventually what's going to happen is just humans will end up working for this technology and lose their autonomy even more, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot more cool input in the book, but I found that to be a new idea that I definitely didn't think of AI creating very advanced technology that the human mind can even comprehend or solve its problems, and thus will be reliant on this AI to solve the problems it has created inevitably, and stuff of that sort. So, he brought up some good points of like, people that don't like using computers, but they're forced to use it just to continue to be employed. And eventually, I think what's going to happen too is they'll be like, in video games and movies, I think it's super cool. But in practice, I think it's going to be questionable in the sense that they have kind of like brain implants or other kind of artificial enhancements that will make you more productive at work. And then people that don't even want to get this stuff will be forced to eventually get it just to be able to stay employed. And then it'll create this kind of, vicious cycle. Of course, there are going to be various side effects, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, look at even our cell phone. That could be seen as a cybernetic. It's not attached to you, but it kind of makes you into a cyborg. It has a lot of features of like a cyborg. And in fact, when you leave it at home and you leave without it, it almost feels like you left your arm, like a piece of yourself. So just to give you an idea of how dependent you are on your phone these days, but can you imagine then getting like a chip implants into your brain and who knows, eventually probably just be, remember the movie Matrix, one of my favorite movies, where they're in these pods, and basically you're in this pod in this huge like energy type of cell factory, and that's kind of the human existence. He's kind of predicting you will go in that direction. So a little bit off topic, but well, not quite off topic, considering we're talking about rewilding your diet today. But a good book is it's quite short. I'm pretty sure you can finish it in like a day, but it brings up some good points. So, all right, guys, well, have a good weekend. I hope this was helpful, and take care.